Bonjour and welcome to the Total Football Soccer Show, Richmond's first, only and therefore best soccer talk show. I'm Daryl.
And I'm Taylor.
And this week on the show,
the World Cup is 7 months away and all 32 spots have now been filled. We'll tell you who's in, who's out and why Thierry Henry deserves a stern talking to.
This Sunday, LA Galaxy takes on Real Salt Lake in MLS Cup 2009. We'll preview the battle of strange hairdos and similar names as Beckham meets Beckerman.
Then it's top five time as Daryl and myself list the World Cup teams we're most excited to see, one of which features a former Richmond kicker.
Last and possibly least, Taylor will attempt to narrow my 6-3 lead in the spelling bee. This week we're spelling MLS Cup winners. Okay, Taylor, so yesterday was the finale of World Cup qualifying.
Yeah.
Big, big deal. So we now know the 32 teams that will compete at World Cup 2010 in South Africa next June.
We do indeed.
So I think maybe we should read them out on air.
Yeah, I was thinking that might be a good idea.
Could you name them all?
I think I could.
Okay, let's go confederation by confederation.
I may have just put my foot in my mouth. We'll see how this goes.
We'll see. Okay, why don't you tell me, first of all, from Asia, there are four teams.
North Korea, South Korea, Japan, and Australia.
Okay, and there's Oceania.
Just Oceania, the one would be New Zealand, who qualified in playoffs.
The big one, Europe, 12 teams.
Here we go. We got England, Switzerland,
yep.
Germany, France, Spain,
yep.
Serbia, Portugal, Greece, Slovenia, Slovakia.
Yep.
Uh-oh. Now I'm trailing here.
Italy?
Oh, of course.
The World Cup holders?
How did I forget the World Cup holders? And then I believe the Netherlands.
Exactly.
And I want to talk about France in a little bit.
Of course, yeah. I think we've got a lot to say about France.
I do indeed. I do indeed.
All right. And then there are also three teams from CONCACAF, which is the North and Central America plus the Caribbean.
Right. And that would be the United States, Mexico, and Honduras.
Exactly. South America.
Eesh, this is one where I'm going to struggle.
Five teams.
There's only five. Brazil, Argentina, Chile, Paraguay, and as of yesterday, Uruguay.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. And our last one, the big one, really.
Yeah.
Africa. This is the continent that's hosting it.
Right. All right. South Africa qualify automatically. And then you got Cote d'Ivoire, or Ivory Coast,
yep.
Ghana, Nigeria, Cameroon, and then, as of yesterday as well, Algeria.
Exactly. And that's our 32 teams for the World Cup.
Right. And
the Algeria game was big. That was the playoff yesterday with Egypt.
And I was shocked. It was played in Sudan, which really surprised me. And what surprised me even more was that I would have bet my house that I don't even own. I would have bet on Egypt winning. And yet, Algeria really pulled it off. And that's kind of the reason why I'm excited about this World Cup, is because you never know what's going to happen. You know, that's why you watch the games. But I think...
For the drama.
Yeah, Daryl and I were talking about it off air, and Daryl had a really interesting point about the teams that are going from Africa.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm the first person to make this point,
yeah.
But I think it's great that for this first World Cup on African soil, we're going to have a really strong contingent of African teams, especially Nigeria, Cameroon, Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire. I mean, they are the strong, strong teams.
Yeah.
I think you can argue Egypt are the strongest team in Africa because they've won the last two African Cup of Nations.
Mm-hmm. But they're not going.
They're not going because Algeria were the better team. So, yeah, they're not going.
Now, another team that qualified yesterday but may not have been the best team was France.
Yeah.
I watched this game. I was really upset. They went to Ireland. They're playing Ireland. And they went to Ireland. They beat them 1-0. So all they had to do was come home and win or tie.
Yep.
And they did that, but they did it in kind of cheating, and by kind of I mean deliberately cheating way. Ireland went up 1-0, and then in extra time, ball was played in. Thierry Henry, it was like a beautiful NFL catch. He catches the ball, plays it back across the middle. France score. They advance.
Yeah, if you haven't seen this was big, big news.
Yeah.
Henry didn't just handball it. He sort of controlled it on his forearm.
Yeah, he hit it twice. Then
used his hand to direct it, and then crossed the ball for William Gallas to score the all-important goal that sent them to the World Cup.
And I hate to sound like the you know, the uber American, but I am so rooting for France to fail in this World Cup now. I was so excited about it, you know, because, you know, Ireland, they played scrappy, they came out, I couldn't believe they played as well as they did, and then to lose like that, I have no sympathy for France. I hope they lose every game.
Well, I think you've got to be careful not to sort of damn the whole nation of France just because of what Thierry Henry did.
All right, fair enough.
I think we can definitely say that he cheated, and that, I mean, I lost a lot of respect for him for doing that.
Yeah, that's what blew my mind, is that he has this great reputation of, like, you know, of being an upstanding guy. He's, you know, humanitarian, stuff like that. He didn't even acknowledge it. It was kind of like this sheepish, like, did I get away with that? And then he kind of walks away. You don't expect that from him, and that's kind of why I'm disappointed, because I'd say that he's one of the more likable guys.
Absolutely.
And you take him away, I don't know. I mean, they're less likable to me.
Well, maybe we should look at it from Thierry Henry's perspective for a minute. If you're a player playing for your country, trying to get to the World Cup, wouldn't you do everything in your power to get there?
maybe
if you were playing for the USA and you had the chance to get them to the World Cup, would you have done it?
Probably. I'll say that. But the thing is, I'm never going to play for the USA. And so I have to look at it as a fan. And that's kind of how I thought of it, as if the United States had done this, how would I feel? Right. And I think that I'd be okay because they're going to the World Cup. But I would also feel like, oh, great, now we have that even worse reputation of like, oh, and you cheated to get here.
I heard from a couple of France fans today via email, and they are embarrassed. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can they not be?
Yeah.
But I'm sure they'd rather be embarrassed and going to the World Cup than be not embarrassed and not going to the World Cup.
Yeah, I'll give you that. That's definitely fair. But I'll say this, you know, I'm an American fan. I like England as well. I don't really care about Ireland if they make it or not. I don't really care about France if they make it or not. But yesterday I was so into this game. And that's the beauty of the World Cup, is there were five, six games on yesterday, and
six
I was
players.
Into all of them. Yeah, I was into all of them. And, you know, you can't get that with, you know, two baseball teams unless they're one of your teams. You know, World Cup, you can.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Even more so for this World Cup, you look at the 32 teams.
Yeah.
It's a really strong field.
Yeah, definitely.
There really aren't that many big teams missing.
No, I'd say the ones that have come to mind quickly would be the two big surprises from Euro 2008. That'd be Turkey and Russia.
Yeah, especially Turkey's last-minute comebacks and all that. That would have been good. And maybe Croatia as well.
Yeah, you could throw them in there. But I think on the whole, you're right. You know, you might say, like, I don't really want to see Slovenia. I'd rather see Turkey or Russia. But the fact is, Slovenia earned their spot.
Yeah, I mean, they beat Russia over two legs.
Yeah, so. Seriously.
Exactly. The other thing is the big name players will be there. We thought maybe Cristiano Ronaldo wouldn't be there. We thought maybe Leo Messi wouldn't be there. They're both going to be there.
Yeah, Portugal are playing Bosnia-Herzegovina in their playoff, and I got to admit I was pulling for Bosnia because I really didn't want Ronaldo there. I suppose it's good for the sport, but not so much good for me. But he's there, and so now we know the 32 teams that are going to be there, but we don't actually know who they're going to be playing, and we find that out on December 4th.
Yeah, for those who don't know, the 32 teams will be drawn into 8 groups of 4.
Right.
And that's a big day when we find out who's playing who.
Yeah, so I got to ask you, Daryl. We don't know the seedings. We don't really know how they're going to be ranked. But if you could pick your ideal group, what's it going to be?
My ideal group for England?
Yes.
Well, I'd want England to have the easiest group possible. No, actually, I'd like for England to play the USA.
Yeah.
I just think it'd be a big deal, basically. Mm-hmm. So I'd enjoy that. And yeah, maybe I'd want England to draw the USA and maybe another big team just to really have an exciting group.
Yeah, great. You want to go to the group of death again?
Yeah, and maybe we'll throw New Zealand in there as well. Just
fair enough.
3 points.
Yeah, my head says that I want to draw like South Africa. I think if I were picking a group, I'd want England, USA, and I feel like we're going to get Algeria. I don't know why, but I feel like we might.
All right.
And then, I don't know, one other team. Yeah, I'll go with New Zealand. Why not? That'd be okay with me.
All right, so you heard it here first. There's going to be a group with England and USA in it.
There you go.
And that's going to cause quite a rivalry in the studio here.
Yeah, and I guess the only way to know for sure is to tune in after December 4th to find out what the groups are going to be.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3.
And if you've got any feedback, then email it to us at soccer@wrir.org or post it on the website at podcast.theoffside.com. This Sunday, November 22nd, the LA Galaxy meets Real Salt Lake in the MLS Cup Final.
Yeah, for those who don't know, MLS Cup Final is basically the Super Bowl for Major League Soccer.
Yeah.
Right? And if you really don't know, there's a regular season followed by playoffs. Followed by more playoffs, but then the two winners of the two conferences meet in MLS
Cup. Yeah, so LA knocked off Houston in the Western Conference Final to make it to the MLS Cup Final.
Yep.
And then Real Salt Lake knocked off Chicago in the Eastern Conference Final, which is a little bit strange considering that Real Salt Lake are, you know, based out of Utah.
Yeah, and they're also Western Conference runners-up last year.
Oh, yeah, last year they were, yeah. So it's a little bit strange, but they're your finalists.
Actually, before we go ahead with this, I want to complain about this.
Yeah, okay.
I just can't get my head around this Western Conference, Eastern Conference final thing. It's a semi-final, right? It's the semi-final of MLS Cup.
You're mad because LA got a trophy, aren't you?
I am, yeah. This is a whole other thing. I watched the game supporting LA because I thought for the good of Major League Soccer, I want to see Beckham in a final, right? But then when they won, I thought, great, they're in the final. Why are they lifting a trophy now?
I guess it's like the conference structure that you have in American football, you know, where you have the AFC, the American Football Conference, and the NFC, the National Football Conference. It's kind of the same thing in the MLS, although to me it's kind of silly because eventually you're going to get to like a single table, single tier kind of format, and then, you know, this whole thing will be moot. But until then, Utah is apparently Eastern.
Anyway.
Yeah.
On to the final, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What do we know about these teams?
The main thing I know about Real Salt Lake is their coach, Jason Kreis. He's 36 years old, and yet, you know, he's made an MLS Cup final, and it says something about, you know, he was an amazing player, and now it looks like he's going to be a pretty good coach.
You know, I think it says something about Kreis that Real Salt Lake doesn't really have any big names. They don't have a Beckham. They don't have a Donovan. Mm-hmm. But they're from what I understand, they're just a very well-organized team. There's a great team ethic there, and that's due to the coach.
Yeah, well, they do also have Kyle Beckerman, who's interested in skateboarding, and Chris Wingert, who's interested in Led Zeppelin. So the team should be very popular to adolescent Americans.
We do know about Kyle Beckerman, don't we?
Yes, yeah, he's put in some American appearances.
He's played for the US. He's the guy, if you don't know, he's the guy with the big dreadlocks.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic hair.
Yeah, yeah.
The great thing about Kyle Beckerman is it's going to confuse people who are tuning in to watch Beckham.
Yeah.
Because they're going to see Beckham.
Oh, yeah.
He's got kind of wacky hair. Maybe it's Beckham. That's
yeah,
going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, Beckham seems to have gone a little nuts with his hairdo as well.
Yeah, but he's got some sort of weird... It's like lifted and shaved and... I don't know. I'm not going to spend this show talking about Beckham's hair.
But why? It's what everyone wants us to do, Daryl. Yeah, so what have you found out about the LA Galaxy?
Well, I've actually been paying a little bit of attention to Galaxy this year. Mostly because David Beckham's also been paying attention.
Yeah.
I feel like he's put the effort in this year. For example, for the what I'll call MLS Cup semi-final against Houston, he skipped an England game, the friendly against Brazil, which is rare. Normally, he'd always go and play for England.
But don't you think, I mean, you know, that's a commentary on the fact that, you know, Major League Soccer is playing during international breaks, but it's a friendly. It doesn't. I mean, I know he's trying to make the English team, but it doesn't really matter. Like, shouldn't that just be, like, not even a question? Like, if he's playing for AC Milan, which he will be in January... There's no way he'd play for England. He would always stay with Milan.
Yeah, well, yeah. If we're going to get into that, we're going to have to talk about the way MLS is set up, and that's three other shows we could fill right there with that.
All right, so I guess we should stay on subject and just say that I would agree with you. I think you hit on it before, that it's really important for the MLS that Beckham, you know, make the finals and play well and, you know, lift the finals trophy, I should say.
Yeah, it's going to look good for the league, right? If Beckham wins, it looks good for the league, rather than him coming here for 3 years and failing altogether.
Yeah, and... I'm not entirely sure, but I believe that this could be the end of his guaranteed contract, and I believe he has an opt-out clause.
Yeah, we don't know for sure, do we?
We don't know for sure.
We know he's going to Milan in January on loan.
Yeah.
We don't know if he's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
He may or may not. This could be the end of Beckham in the league. I don't know.
So it could be like the Ronaldo situation, where once he's won, you know, the MLS Cup, what's the point in staying? He's already won one. Let's go on to Italy, where he's never won anything.
Yeah, it could be. Mm-hmm. But also, I don't want to just focus on Beckham, because there is... a very good Galaxy team around him now.
There are other players?
There are other players.
I was not aware.
I mean, everyone knows about Landon Donovan. Mm-hmm. We've had this conversation before. You're not a big fan. I really like Landon Donovan.
I'd like to see him win. I'd like to see him win abroad. But, you know, I think he is... I'm beginning to come around to the idea that he's the best American player. So.
And yeah, for that reason, he could be leaving as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's his time to move abroad and play for a European team. So this could be the last we see of Donovan in MLS. But then the other thing is LA suddenly... look like a team.
They really do.
Bruce Arena came in the middle of 2008. Mm-hmm. He's got that team organized now.
Yep.
The smart thing he did in the offseason before 2009 started, he got Greg Berhalter, the sort of veteran defender, and he signed a guy called, what's his name? Omar Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
He got him in the draft, young defender, MLS Rookie of the Year. So he sort of restructured that defense with an old guy and a young guy.
Yeah, so they've got all these players, they're coming together, and I'd say they've got a fairly well-rounded team.
Yeah, and it's about time.
Yeah, definitely.
The problem for me in terms of promoting Major League Soccer is when Beckham joined in 2007, if they'd had a well-rounded team then, it could have all gone much, much better. He could have made the final that year, and the media attention and the American public's attention would have been on this MLS Cup final in 2007 if they'd been there.
I'd say it wouldn't have even stopped, you know, because it was there, and then they just didn't play, and so it faded. If they'd kept playing this well and made the final, it never would have left, and maybe you'd still have that. You know, you wouldn't... This year, it's being broadcast on ESPN for the first time in Major League Soccer history. It's always
instead
been on
ABC.
ABC,
right, yeah.
And, you know, like, Beckham is playing in a final, and the American public won't be able to see it on, you know, a basic channel. And I think that says something about what's happened with the popularity.
Yeah, and it's a shame, but... So at the same time, it's going to be great if Beckham does win a trophy. It's a shame it didn't happen earlier.
Mm-hmm. But as it is, we've got LA Galaxy, Real Salt Lake, Sunday night, 8:30 kickoff on ESPN 1. Not 2, ESPN 1.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3.
And if you've got any feedback, then email it to us at soccer@wrir.org or post it on the website at podcast.theoffside.com.
Okay, so it's time for another Top 5. This week, because we now know all 32 World Cup qualifiers, Talia and myself are going to list the top five teams we're most looking forward to seeing at next summer's World Cup.
Yeah, as a disclaimer, it's not necessarily like the teams that we think are going to win or the top five best teams. It's just the top five teams that we think could be the most interesting or the ones we're most looking forward to watch.
For various reasons.
There you go.
We're going to exclude England and the USA.
Right.
For obvious reasons, because those are the teams we're looking forward to seeing, really, because they're our teams, right?
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay, so my number five is North Korea.
Ooh.
Very simple reason is that we don't know anything about them.
Yeah.
We don't know much about the football team. We don't know much about the nation.
And that's maybe intentional, would you say?
I don't know, maybe. I mean, they cancelled a friendly back in September, mm-hmm. claiming food poisoning. And there's a theory that maybe they're deliberately not letting us see much of them.
Yeah.
But it's more about North Korean society in general.
Yeah.
We don't get to see inside that society at all. Mm-hmm. And the team is on the world stage. It's going to be a chance for us to really have a look at North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
As a football team and as a nation. So that's my number five.
Yeah, I was kind of excited when there was a possibility that Venezuela was going to qualify, because then you could have Hugo Chavez and Kim Jong-il in the same arena. Could have been amazing. My number five is Argentina. There's two main reasons for this. The first is the idea that they boast some of like the most talented players in the world. They have Messi and Tevez and Aguero and all these just amazing players, and yet they barely qualified. It took this last gasp away win at Uruguay to really automatically qualify.
But how exciting was that?
But see, and that's the thing. That's the reason why I'm picking them, because it may be a little bit silly, but there's that idea that, you know, winners know how to win and losers don't. I mean, and that's what it is. Like, Argentina, when they had to win, they won.
Although they could have won earlier.
Yeah, obviously. But when they had to, they did. The other reason, obviously, is because Diego Maradona is, in my opinion, a little bit nuts. He's
maybe we'll talk about him later, because I get a feeling Argentina might feature on my list.
Fair enough. We can bring him up in a little bit.
All right, so my number four mm-hmm. is New Zealand.
Oh, I like this.
Yeah, haven't qualified for a World Cup since 1982.
Mm-hmm.
They've basically benefited from Australia leaving Oceania mm-hmm. and going to the Asian qualification zone. They're going to be a small team. They're going to struggle. But it's going to be kind of exciting to have an underdog there.
Yeah, but I mean, to be an underdog, don't you at least have like some kind of a chance? Because I'm not sure that New Zealand do.
No, that's the ultimate underdog.
All right.
The other thing about New Zealand, they have Tim Brown, former Richmond kicker. I believe he'll be the only former Richmond kicker at the World Cup 2010.
I think that's a safe thing to say, yeah.
I've got a great stat about New Zealand as well.
What's that?
Apparently, they're the only team to qualify for a World Cup without beating a nation whose population is over 1 million.
Wow. And why is it again that we think they're going to do okay?
I'm not sure, but it's going to be exciting to watch.
Well, it's funny. You mentioned my number four, which is Australia. I've got a plethora of reasons for them. There's the possibility that a 700-pound Mark Viduka could be deployed at some point. There's my developing man crush on Harry Kewell. And there's the fact that they're just genuinely a good side. They qualified with relative ease out of the Asian Confederation. And, you know, they scored a lot of goals. They only got two away from home, but still, you know, they played well. And I think the biggest thing for me is how similar they are to the United States. You know, football isn't necessarily absolutely.
That's
dominant
what we talked
sport
about
there.
Last week, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And so it's growing there. And I think that you've seen that, you know, 2006 was one of the first ones that qualified. Now they're here again. It could keep growing. And I like that similarity between the United States.
Yes, part of them getting settled, sort of mm-hmm. like the USA has in recent years.
Yeah.
Okay, so my number three mm-hmm. is Côte d'Ivoire
mm-hmm.
or Ivory Coast.
My number three as well is Côte d'Ivoire. So there we go.
So let's talk about it together.
All right, we can.
All right, so why are they your number three?
For me, it was a really tough decision between Ivory Coast and Ghana.
I have that in front of me here.
Yeah, and I think I was looking
Let's talk about both of them.
Okay. Well, I looked at the lineup for Ghana, and I would say that they arguably have a better midfield, except their captain, Stephen Appiah, has kind of been out of club play for almost a year now.
Yeah, it's a great story. He was without a club for mm-hmm. a year or two, I think, after his disagreement with Fenerbahce. But he kept playing for Ghana and kept captaining them, which I think is fantastic. Then we've got, Michael Essien playing for Ghana?
Mm-hmm. Sulu Mentari playing for Inter Milan. Yeah, so they've got some talented players, but you look at the Ivory Coast and they just have so much, mainly Didier Drogba, the Chelsea striker.
Who is incredible form.
Yeah, and that definitely showed in qualifying. If you look at the stats, Ghana played teams whose average world ranking was 77. They had a goal differential of 6. Ivory Coast played teams who had a ranking of 72. They had a goal differential of 15. So clearly, they're scoring goals, they're playing well, and I think that if you're looking for an African team, they're going to be the team to beat.
Yeah, I think the thing with Ivory Coast, they've got not just Drogba, they've got Yaya Touré, who's the Barcelona midfielder. They've got Kolo Touré at the back. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They've got a spine of a real
team. Yeah, Solomon Kalou, they've got a real team in there.
And then the reason we're talking about these teams is World Cup 2010 in South Africa, first World Cup on African soil. So it's going to be exciting if an African team does well.
Yeah.
It's not going to be South Africa, probably, because they're
probably
not that great.
Yeah.
And it is going to be Ghana or Ivory Coast.
I'd agree, yeah.
Okay, so my number two is Spain. Euro 2008 champions.
Yep.
Very simple reason. They're just incredible to watch.
Yep.
The way they play, the short passing, mm-hmm. lots of attacking football. I just enjoy watching them.
Who's that team that beat them in the Confederations Cup? Beat them 2-0?
That'd be the USA.
Yeah, that's why I'm looking forward to playing Spain.
And that's the other thing. I mean, they're not impossible to beat.
No, and they do have that reputation of choking, which we'll hit on later. But for now, my number two is Serbia. They qualified out of Group 7 in fairly impressive style, considering that they beat out France for the number one spot. And they have this really great combination of youth and experience, the main one being at the center back. They have arguably two of the best center backs in the world in Nemanja Vidic and Ivanovic from Chelsea. But the thing for me is that they qualified for the 2006 World Cup, and they qualified as Serbia-Montenegro. 7 days before their first game, Montenegro declared their independence, and so they played as unified, and then they split afterwards. And so it's kind of unsettling. You got to think it would be for the team. And so
this is technically Serbia's first World Cup.
Yeah, so this is technically, yeah, exactly. And so you have this unified country, and now they really are playing as like one team, one country. You know, before they weren't, so we'll see how it goes.
That's a great pick. So we're at my number one already.
And thank you for that, by the way. Yeah.
My number one is Argentina, as you mentioned earlier.
All right.
And sort of like what you said, I think Maradona, despite the shambles of qualifying, he's that guy who could pull it all together.
Yeah.
And Argentina could have a great tournament. Or it could be a complete disaster. You literally don't know what's going to happen. I mean, he just got the two-month ban this past weekend.
Yeah.
For what he said at the press conference.
For being outspoken, and we'll leave it at that.
The man is trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But he's kind of fascinating. You know there's going to be some great stories about Diego Maradona at the World Cup. And just for that, as well as the fact that Argentina have got some great players. It's going to be just intense. It's going to be dramatic. Yeah. That's why they're my number one.
I just hope it rains so that we can see another Diego Maradona 10-yard belly slide.
Yeah,
because
nice.
That was impressive. So going back to the choker theme, my number one would be the Netherlands. They ran away with their group. They were arguably the best team to qualify out of Europe, statistically, I'd say.
Yeah.
But they have this reputation of always choking. They can never come through in the clutch. And so,
well, they won Euro 88. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, but you look at, that's the last time they did well in the Euros. They've never won a World Cup. They've lost twice in the 70s. But they've never really come together as a team to pull out, especially not in the modern age, I guess I should say. So you go back to your pick of Spain earlier. You know, Spain always had the reputation of being chokers. And
until
then,
very recently.
Yeah, until Euro 2008 when they won it. And now they don't really have that anymore. And I think that if there's going to be a year for the Netherlands to do it, it's going to be 2010. But we'll see how it goes.
All right. So you're going to probably hear us talk a lot more about the World Cup.
Most likely.
In the next
yeah.
6 months or so. Yeah. But if you've got a team that you think we should have included on this list, a team you're excited to see, or even five teams you're excited to see, then send an email to us at soccer@wrir.org.
Or you can post it on the website at podcast.theoffside.com.
You're listening to the Total Football Soccer Show with Daryl
and Taylor on Richmond Independent Radio 97.3, radio for the rest of us.
Okay, it's that time of the show. Time for another spelling bee.
Awesome.
With Taylor and myself, challenge each other to spell a player's name.
Right.
This week, it's MLS Cup winners, players who have won MLS Cup.
Right. Daryl's currently leading the series 6-3, but I plan on getting back on track this week.
Why don't you try?
All right, I will. But I'll let you go first. So, Daryl, I would like for you to spell El Salvadorian midfielder who won the MLS Cup in 2002 with LA, Mauricio Cienfuegos.
Wow.
Mauricio Cienfuegos.
Okay. M-A-U-R-I-C-O. Cienfuegos. C-I-E-N. F-U-E-G-O-S.
You're going to be so disappointed with yourself. You left off an I in Mauricio. You had everything right, but you got to Maurice, and then you went O. So you spelled Maurice O, Cienfuegos.
Moral
victory. You were so close.
A moral victory.
Yeah, all right.
All right, I'm going to give you a relatively easy one.
All right.
All right. I know he's a favorite player of yours, I think.
Oh, God.
He won MLS Cup with DC in 2004.
Okay.
He's currently on LA Galaxy, but I think he's still out with a head injury, so he won't be playing in the final.
Mm-hmm.
It's Aleko Eskandarian.
I should get this. A-L... E C K O E S K A N D A R I A N.
Correct.
Yes. He pulls one back. Just barely, but he pulls one back.
So that makes it 6-4.
Yes, you're still killing me.
But at least it's a competition.
At least thank you for that backhanded compliment. I appreciate that.
So that brings us to the end of another show. Before we go, we'd like to close with a quote, as usual.
Mm-hmm.
So in honor of Thierry Henry's pretty blatant handball for France.
I'd say very blatant, but whatever you want to do.
We're going to close with a quote from probably the most famous handballer in history, Diego Maradona, after he scored against England in 1986.
The goal was scored a little bit by the hand of God and a little bit by the head of Maradona.
Yeah, you keep telling yourself that, Diego.
Yeah, seriously.